You're listening to Muslimish Freethinkers, a podcast dedicated to fostering conversations on matters of faith and disbelief.
Welcome to Muslimish broadcast. We are celebrating Muslimish 9th anniversary today with a topic titled Status of the Questioning Muslim. And with me in the virtual studio, Ibrahim Abdullah, founder of Muslimish and a national organizer from New York City. Welcome, Ibrahim.
Thank you, Sam. How are you?
Alhamdulillah.
Awesome. Not a very good start for the questioning Muslim. Alhamdulillah.
So, Ibrahim, let's talk about the status of the questioning Muslim. What has changed since 2012 till today in your experience in Muslimish?
Okay. So I wanted to speak about this from Muslimish perspective, how we've experienced this as an organization, and then talk about my general impressions of what I feel is happening around the world. In the United States, when we started in 2012, our first meeting was on May 30th in New York City. And at the time, we were the only group that met in person in New York, and as far as I know, in the United States. There was another group in Canada that has been meeting from before, but in the United States, there were no groups for questioning Muslims or former Muslims that have been meeting in real life. There have been online groups, but nothing that met in real life. So in those terms, I think there's been a lot of progress, and we can say that it's positively good change that has been happening since 2012, because we've had at least one meeting a month, if not two a month, in New York City and in five other U.S. cities. We've had multiple conferences. We've really created a community, I think, of people who can depend on each other, help each other when they're looking for work, for housing, people getting married and having kids, creating families. This has happened in the last 9 years, and we've seen it in our community, and it's definitely a positive change. I don't want to be too positive, because as I was asking people in the group or friends who have, from similar background, what they thought was going on, everybody had like negative input. Like everybody's like, oh no, things are not good. Things are not good. Things are not good is the general answer that I got. And I had to remind people, well, compare things that are not good right now with how bad things were in 2012. Is it better or worse? That's really the question that I would like to reflect on today. Things are not great, but compared to 2012, are we better or worse? Are things better or worse? And I think, my opinion is that it's definitely better. It's definitely better for many reasons. Some of it are really outside of our control at all, and it was going to happen with or without us. The technology advances, the ability to communicate easier, internet access for more people, that by definition will make the conditions of the questioning Muslim better, because they're going to allow them to have a place where they can share their thoughts and ideas and hear feedback from people. We see it with every new platform that comes in. When the new platform starts, there's an influx of secular people and people who have questions and people who have ideas that are outside the orthodox framework. They flood the system. The conservative majority starts asking for rules from the platform to limit freedom of speech, the rules are imposed, but then another platform opens up and allows people to speak freely. And we see this, the latest one is in Clubhouse, but that's for later on. I want to move back to United States and what we've seen with Muslimish in terms of growth in membership, also in having other organizations have started in the United States, and some of them have big following, and some of them are just starting, and it shows that there is a lot of different ways that people can identify themselves and try to be active in the community. So also another thing I've noticed is that a lot of people, what are they calling themselves? When we first started, there was a lot of people calling themselves ex-Muslim or former Muslim or secular Muslim. And I feel that there is less now of that, and there's more people calling themselves atheist or secular or agnostic from Muslim background. I feel that this is how more people are describing themselves now. And also what I'm noticing is that there's a lot of people that are definitively not Muslim anymore, versus when we started, there was a lot of people who were, when they were calling to join the group, were more on the fence, or they were more questioning. So I feel like that is something that I have noticed in, you know, interviewing new members who are joining the group. What do you think is happening on your end in Detroit? Are things different there?
Yeah, so first of all, I have the same impression as you that things have gotten better from 2012 till today. Sometimes we forget, but remember when we started in 2012, it was a kind of a fearful and a tense environment where people were worried about their security, questioning religion was something that is people were scared to talk about this topic, so they're considered more of taboo topics. People were using pseudonyms. Our meetings, I remember the first meetup you had in New York, Ibrahim, you even called the police, right, to be there?
I did not call the police, but I think, well, two people came, mm-hmm. and I think one of them was a police officer.
Yeah.
Just, you know, like that. I don't have a proof to that, but like yeah. I never saw him again. And I'm pretty sure that one person I did know and another person I didn't know, but his story was kind of weak and I never saw him again. I'm pretty sure he was a police officer, but I'm not even sure if they was there for our security or to mm-hmm. check that we were not a terrorist organization. It yeah. could have been either way.
But, and the first conference we had in 2013, it was completely secretive.
It was, and we got some threats, and I think that's gone away now. We and I think also like when we see like things were secretive and we are not fearful anymore because we're used to doing this. We've been doing it for 9 years, and that makes you more comfortable in doing things. For some people, it's still very difficult and fearful. And if you notice, one of a group members posted an ad multiple times asking for people who were going through the questioning phase to be in a documentary, and nobody, you know, signed up for that because it's still, it's not an easy thing to do for people, and it still can be very dangerous for a lot of people. We're out of it now because we're in a different place in our lives. We're definitely more independent. We've been doing this for a long time, and that gives you confidence. And your experience in dealing with people makes you more confident in dealing with different situations.
Yeah, and the environment changed too. I mean, there has been a lot of activism in that path, and the environment changed from 2012 to today. But first of all,
and if you want to really think about like a big dramatic change, think about not 2012. Think about 1979 and today, when Salman Rushdie came up with Islamic verses, how bad that was. And I'm copying this, I'm borrowing this from Ali Rizvi because he used that example in his book, The right. Atheist Muslim. He said, think about how things were when Salman Rushdie came up with the satanic verses versus what they are now. And that is a big noticeable change. Yeah,
and also the blasphemous cartoons in their first edition, there was a big uproar. Now you can't even keep count of such publications. I feel also there were two political things that happened in the Middle East that that kind of also changed things in that perspective, which was after the Arab Spring, there were some, and after also the occupation / liberation of Iraq, what happened in Egypt and in Iraq, in both countries, the biggest historically Islamic parties or movements have taken political power in these two countries. The Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt in 2011-2012, and the Dawah Party in Iraq, which is the largest in the Shia world as a political movement, with a, an intellectual political movement. I'm not talking like about a militia or just a military, because there's a lot of Islamic military groups, but intellectual ones, these are rare. And both of them took leadership, took rule, and they both failed miserably. And with them failed almost political Islam. So I think that opened up the space for questioning even further, and replaced the current systems with perhaps a more secular or aspiring to be secular systems that allow for tolerance and criticism and open-minded dialogue. I feel that helped. Don't you feel that Egypt today or Iraq today are more open towards questioning or critical thought?
That's a very okay. So I don't know. Things have been, in terms of freedom of speech in general in Egypt, I'm going to say worse than 2012. Now I can remember that when we started in 2012, that was the wake of the Arab Spring. That was like, that I was definitely personally inspired by what happened in Egypt, and that helped me meet others that had similar thinking. And I thought that, well, when I first met people who had similar thinking, I thought that we need to work together, because everybody thought that they were the only one. That was the situation back then. Everybody thought they were the only one. You started talking to people, and then you find out that they all share the same ideas. But what happened, and also because the Brotherhood took over the Egyptian Revolution in the beginning, it made it clear to me that there needs to be some organized movement that can be a counterbalance to the Muslim Brotherhood, because the Muslim Brotherhood is the only organized group on the ground. And that made me think we need to have an organized group on the ground. So when the next revolution happens, and it will happen eventually, when the next revolution happens, we would have some sort of organization.
Hashtag Arab Spring 2.
No, let's not call it that, because that was a failure. I know people like to romanticize this, but I think also that that's part of the, and you and I are probably not going to agree on this, but I think it's part of the Arab tendency to draw failures as victories.
Victory. Yeah.
It's really no way to achieve anything. This was a failure. We failed here. We had an opportunity. And then we chose to do it the democratic way, but the democratic way will, and that again, we leave the United States now, we're going to Middle Earth. And in Middle Earth, democracy is not a good solution, because democracy is going to lead to the masses, and the masses are not educated enough to make an intelligent choice for themselves. Now, I know that's not a popular thing to say, but it's what I think is the truth. So in Egypt, there has been waves. The first wave, right after the revolution, there was complete freedom, a freedom that I think anybody who has lived through it between 11 and 12 is never going to forget, the amount of freedom that was like almost, I'm not going to say like too much, because I don't think that there's such a thing, but a lot of people would think that it was too much. And then the Brotherhood came into power. And when the Brotherhood came into power, that made anybody who had a secular thought empowered by the deep state to criticize that. And now when the deep state came back, the counter-revolution, that became very, very oppressive against anything that was out of the orthodoxy, whether it was political or whether it was religious. And but I feel that I feel that, you know, the deep state and the dictators and the kings of Middle Earth have been moving towards a more open-mindedness when speaking about religion. And you can see this very, very clearly. The biggest example that we can see is Saudi Arabia.
Mohammed bin Salman.
Yes. Mohammed bin Salman is, you know, I know a lot of people don't like him. I don't like him politically.
But your voice went down, Ibrahim.
I'm sorry. I got a call. I was saying that Mohammed bin Salman is definitely a force for good in terms of freedom of speech about religion. And that is going to have ripple effect throughout the Muslim world.
Yes. I think Mohammed bin Salman's last interview, it's kind of the final hit for Wahhabism. It was kind of declaring the end of Wahhabism.
Yes.
Or the sponsorship of Saudi Arabia of Wahhabism.
Which is what made it thrive. And let's look at the examples that really worked in the Muslim world where states have been more secular. I look at Turkey and I look at Tunisia, Ataturk and Bourguiba. These were dictators that enforced secularism. And it, you know, so I know that we are, you know, in very secular in our circles of people, you know, people who are questioning Muslims or former Muslims, people are anti-dictatorships, of course, and that's understandable. But I think we need to recognize also that these dictatorships have been good for at least that peace. There is, in Egypt, even Sisi has been on a clash course with Al-Azhar University. He's been asking them to cancel divorce, you know, without paperwork. Basically, if a husband tells a wife you're divorced, that makes the divorce valid. They're trying to change that. They're trying to change women, you know, improve women's rights.
And he ordered the conference for Islamic modernism or the at-tajdeed fil-fikr al-dini.
He did try to do that, but when somebody actually called him, like when Islam al-Bahiri followed up on that and criticized Hadith and criticized al-Bukhari, he was put in jail because still the law was, you know, and he was put in jail based on a lawsuit that was filed by Sheikh al-Azhar, the grand...
No, I'm talking, this is recent. Islam al-Bahiri went to jail previously.
Yes.
There is a modern conference about a couple of years ago. Is that what you're talking about?
No. Well, there was... No, that's not what I'm talking about.
Okay. But he attended it himself.
Yeah.
And it was shocking to the extent that Sheikh Al-Azhar had a problem with it, and he was interrupting the speakers. And
yeah.
Some clips.
Yes, I did see that. Yeah.
Yeah, so these are also...
And Sheikh Al-Azhar, by the way, now is taking a step back. He just, you know, he issued... And this is the part that drives me crazy. Like, Sheikh Al-Azhar has been fighting, like, women's rights for so long, and now he writes one Facebook post saying, like, you know, women can be judges. And now everybody's like, oh, you see how modern this is. I'm like, dude, like, the guy's been, you know, Grand Mufti Al-Azhar for 20 years. Like, you know, he said, well, not 20 years. But, like, the point is, like, this is how easy it is to change people's minds about this. You just need one authority figure to say something, and all the you know, the herd of humans, the human herds will say, Amin. There's like really no real opposition to making Islam better. They'll just say Amin to whatever they tell them. They just don't want to go to jail. They just don't want to be like, you know, people just want to live their life peacefully.
And the history of Islam was always like that.
Yeah.
Basically, the Khalifa, if the Khalifa is moderate, you know, everything goes well. If the Khalifa goes extreme, the whole country is in problem. But so putting aside the general freedom of speech, the freedom of questioning or talking, you know, in a secular voice, do you feel in Egypt that has, you know, gotten better since 2012 till today?
I think so, yes.
Yes.
I think so.
In Saudi Arabia, it did, definitely. The liberals in Arabia are very happy.
In Tunisia, it did.
In Tunisia, it did. In Tunisia, very interesting, because it's a successful, you know, Arabs, the only successful country that came out from the Arab Spring. And the Islamists, they actually won the elections, the first, you know, election. And then,
yeah.
And they kept decreasing in popularity. And now they're a minority in the government. And yeah. It's a big minority, but it's a minority. And the government is kind of like, it has displayed the real will of the people, which is for a modernized type of Islam and an open environment, like pluralistic society, open for questioning or dissent or whatever. In Iraq, the same thing. I mean, Iraq today, it's difficult to speak about it while something's going on. Even today, there is still, you know, there were the Iraqi, what's called the Iraqi Revolution, the last 3-4 years. It happened the same time as the Lebanese Revolution, which also called for secularism and separation between church and state. And now it has renewed today. There's some incidences today and yesterday. But what I mean is these political things have influenced the Islamic world in one sense or another, but we are not downplaying still the difficulties. And we had the last episode, the last broadcast last month, was with a Lebanese free thought group that has spoken in details about the challenges of free thought in Lebanon. I want to just announce to the audience who are watching us live that if you'd like to participate, you can leave your comment to participate live, or I even included the link if you want to join us actually live, video and voice. You can join using this link. One thing I want to add also, Brahim, about your feeling that, yes, I do agree that people are more probably like less reserved about basically calling themselves whatever, agnostic or ex-Muslims. There has been a lot of outspoken ex-Muslims the last 10 years that they have kind of normalized. But I also found out that a lot of the Muslimish friends, many of them, and this has been an interesting phenomena for me, many of them has actually became more Muslim.
Yeah,
they want to try some, they have and went back to some aspects of the culture or some aspects of the faith that they, with choice, they wanted to hold on to. Which is very interesting to me. That's something that you know, it's interesting to observe that there is also some movement in that direction. And
well, I personally, I for one, am someone who is, you know, an atheist, 99% atheist, as I like to say. But my opposition to certain Islamic traditions have gone less and less, because I have, you know, I always say that Muslimish meetings for me are very therapeutic. I always felt that there are certain things I couldn't speak about. And once I was able to speak about them, my, you know, these became less of an issue for me. And once I was able to have intelligent conversation with Muslims, people who call themselves Muslim, believe that they're Muslim, but see things very differently than what is understood to be the truth of Islam, that, you know, in the beginning, I thought that was a little bit hypocritical, but now I feel that this is the future of Islam. This is what Islam is going to look like in the future. And it's good to encourage these people, and it's good to give them space to be able to innovate and come up with ideas and discuss them. And I've noticed that, and this is another thing that I've noticed in like Clubhouse in the last month. I've been on that for a lot. And there's a big movement, especially from Saudi people, that are taking a completely new interpretation of Quran. They're saying that qatala, to kill, doesn't mean to kill. And daraba, to hit, doesn't mean to hit. And like, it basically like completely new, and they have basis to this, which it's very difficult to explain because it goes into the in depth in Arabic language, which but there is there they have resources and they have imams and they have sheikhs that back up this, and it seems to me that it's got like almost government backing. And if you have that, if you have that type of thought backed by the Saudi government, that's going to spread because, you know, people will just follow whatever you tell them to. That's just what people do. They just follow this, they just follow it. So, you know, Saudi Arabia does this. Okay, we'll do it too. You know, so I think in the long term, it's going to be very, very positive. But we have, in all this, what I think is optimism, we need to like, step back and acknowledge that the questioning Muslim anywhere in the world is in a worse situation than questioning Christian or questioning Jew or questioning Hindu or anything else. We are still under the worst conditions in the world. Not that it's a competition, but it is the worst religion to leave. It is the only religion that still kills people that announce that they don't believe in it. It is so. Even things, though things are getting better, let's not forget how bad they are. They're getting better than they are, but they're still pretty bad.
Right. And the social stigma, it overlasts the violence. So even if you live in a liberal society that allows questioning and different interpretations, does not kill or isolate, but at the end of the day, they do still judge and there's a lot of misconceptions about questioning. There's a lot of taboos. There's a lot of judgment that takes place. Yeah. A lot more groups I have been, we can't keep up of them anymore. The number of groups that have popped up to fight for freedom of expression, freedom of right, freedom of dissent, freedom of questioning. At the Arabic level too, there has been a lot of also movements of reform and movements of, like you said, reinterpretation. And now that the political climate is very suitable for them, we're going to see a different Muslim world in the next 50 years.
Yeah.
I feel the last 70 years, or let's say 50 years, the last 50 years have been drawn by the Iranian Saudi socio-economic project, the Iranians backing up a certain type of faith, and Saudi Arabia backing up certain type of faith, and these two have become prominent in the Islamic world. Although I still do believe, and I always say that most Muslims are Muslimish, and most Muslims are moderate. But the extremists, usually they hijack the pulpits. The mosques are not moderate. The mosques, usually, most of the mosques, they usually follow one of the two visions, either the Shia strict interpretation or the, some sort of a Wahhabi backing in many cases.
I don't want to just like to be like about history, but like let's also like remember that the Mujahideen movement in Afghanistan, that was Egyptian soldiers paid for by Saudi money and American intelligence. But that was, you know, the end of the Cold War when America was still, you know, propping up Muslim Mujahideen to fight the, you know, communist Soviets. That is a different world now. And the millennium started with 9/11. And that really, really changed everything in so many ways. I think by the end of this millennium, we're going to have a much better place for freedom of speech in the last part of the planet that still has so many restrictions about freedom of speech, which is, you know, Muslim world. That's the last place. I mean, even sub-Saharan Africa is having better freedom of speech now than the Muslim and Arab world. So that is not going to continue, especially with the internet. I think these are all things that will eventually change the situation, but it's going to take a lot of work, and they're going to be victims. And we just, you know, but time is on our side, and the movement of history is on our side.
Right. There's also another thing, Ibrahim, that when people are perceived as, you know, when certain people who belong to a certain religion, they start perceiving themselves as people, it gives a total different perspective to religion, and it removes the whole intellectual debate from it. And when a lot of young Muslims, especially, for example, in the West, they see the oppression that Muslims are having, for example, the Uyghur Muslims in China or the Rwandan Muslims in Burma, or the, you know, even they perceive مثلا, the Palestinian issue sometimes also from as Muslims, although it's not a Muslim issue, etc. And, you know, some of the Islamophobia, although it has been less prominent lately. So when they see all that, sometimes it brings them closer to their religious identity, because they perceive it as a racial identity, or they perceive it as a national identity. They see it as an identifying force in their lives, and they want to stand against the oppression. And I find a lot of youth, they find being a Muslim is a form of resistance in front of these forces. And what's your thoughts about that?
No, I agree. I mean, when I first moved to America right after 9/11, I became more religious because I felt that my identity was under attack. But so that's a normal reaction to things. But for a lot of people, me included, that made me take a second look at certain things in the religion, and that made me question them. But that's understandable. If there's certain people are just going to want to belong to the group, and if they need that, they need that. That's whatever floats your boat, whatever makes you happy, as long as you don't oppress somebody else. I think people who are feeling the oppression against Muslims in China or in Burma, they will say that, you know, it will make them identify more or hang on to their identity more. There are certain people who are going to do that with everything, with national identity, with religious identity. And that's different people at different places, but our target audience, really. We're our target audience is the thinking human, not the person who wants to, like, you know, belong to the group. I mean, we do offer a community, but that's not why people come, I don't think. I mean, for me, it wasn't about the community. It's more about the ideas. And in Palestine, for example, we've seen some very positive things happening there with, like, for example, the LGBT Palestinian community having the first Arab gay pride in Israel. So that is definitely a positive change. But I disagree that the Palestine issue is not an Islamic issue. It is being marketed as an Islamic issue. And if it wasn't, you wouldn't find all this, you know, attention to it. It's like, I have an opinion that is probably going to be different than most people in the group, is I feel that for 3 weeks, there have been clashes at the Al-Aqsa Mosque or in Jerusalem, and not a single Palestinian was killed. There was a lot of people who were injured, but not a single person was killed. People started dying when Hamas started throwing rockets. And still people, even secular people, cheer for Hamas. And it's we need to, like, stop that cycle. I mean, like, you know, this has been the same mistake happening repeatedly for 70 years. Every time the same thing happens, and then Arabs lose and declare victory. It's like, it's pathetic.
Yeah. I mean, the point is the repetition of it, you know, just repeating it over and over, expecting different results. It's crazy. Like, we've seen this. I've grown up for the last 4 years seeing the same cycle, you know, of violent clashes, a lot of deaths and tears, and mostly from the Palestinian side. And then we perceive it as victory, and we move on to the next cycle. And we need to try something different rather than this.
Yeah, I think we need, you know, and this is not our subject, but I need to say this. We need to come up with an offer and put it on the table that's a little flexible, that's a little realistic. And, you know, and that's not happening.
No, we're not even discussing that subject. Like, people don't even discuss this subject. This is a taboo subject. We have no clear vision. We have no united vision of this on this issue. We don't have a vision for peace. You know, if people gather to protest when there is a catastrophe, but they don't gather really to study the issue and shape their opinions about it. And that's something lacking. And I hope that it will improve as more aware people are now opening their eyes on this issue. So, yeah, but that's one of the issues that actually bring, you know, some Muslims to hold on to their identity because they see it as a form of resistance. They perceive that religious identity as being under attack.
But that religious identity, the problem with that is it's making a building more important than human lives.
Yeah, they need to question that.
People need to get the priorities straight. That building, that mosque is not important than human life. But that's not what people think. People think that mosque is more important than human life. So that's a big problem.
Yeah, and it's important to remove the religious factor when speaking about these political crises and political issues. Because it will make things actually less tense without all the religious sensitivities to it. From both sides, even the Jewish side complicates things, the extreme right and the religious Jews, they complicate this issue. Another thing I want to talk about, Brahim, is the goals of Muslimish. Since 2012 till today, how do you see the goals of creating free space for dialogue and questioning, and second goal is to promote science, and the third goal to create a pluralistic society, and the fourth goal is to fight blasphemy laws. How have Muslimish done since 2012 on these goals?
Well, I think we have achieved our first two goals or three goals, as you described them. Creating a space for discussion, we have definitely created a space for discussion. There's no question about that. We've been able to do that online. We've done it in 5 U.S. cities in 1 Canadian city. We do conferences every year, multiple conferences. We give a platform to people through the podcast, through the YouTube channel, through social media to be able to communicate. So we have done that. To another extent, we have formed somewhat of a pluralistic society also. We have people who are an opposite points of the spectrum politically working together towards these common goals. The third and final goal, abolishing blasphemy laws, just last year, the U.S. Congress, both House and Senate, passed a law requiring the federal government to put pressure on foreign governments in order to remove any blasphemy laws or apostasy laws. So that is happening as well. We have not really done any work on that front yet, but it's our next frontier. I feel that, you know, people come and go to the group over like the last 9 years. Some people have had a need, they came and fulfilled the need and didn't come back. Some people keep coming back. Some people just needed to know that they're not the only one. And once they created a community, they created a group of friends in their neighborhood, they start hanging out with this group of friends. So I feel that we have definitely helped people. We've helped people find housing, find work, find basic necessities, find love, find a community, and be able to express their opinions. And, you know, COVID took us back a little bit, but COVID was good and bad. It was bad because we couldn't have in-person meetings, but at the same time, religious groups couldn't have in-person meetings either. So it's, I think it's an overall positive. Mm-hmm. We, you know, were able to meet online, we were able to organize online and prepare next steps. So We are ready now to meet in person. We have started meeting in person in New York. We've had a couple of meetings, and we're gonna, you know, get back on schedule of having one meeting a month in New York City. So I'm happy. I feel like, you know, and for me personally, I feel that the group has helped me get over my anger and resentment towards people who have like called me crazy for not believing, people who have attacked me for saying my opinion, which is, I think, is a very reasonable opinion. So finding others who agree with you, realizing you're not the only one, I think that helped me and it helped a lot of people. I think it saved lives. I really do.
Awesome. Great. And I think with that, we've come to the end of our broadcast. Happy anniversary.
Happy anniversary.
Ibrahim, and thank you for the first steps that created this group. I know that it requires a lot of insistence, work, attending meeting, even if you're alone. But then when you see the amount of help that you've provided. I remember that we've helped a girl who has arrived to Turkey to settle in. And now she's helping others in Turkey who are arriving there. And the cycle of support continues. People who now have friends and partners due to Muslimish. And also, we created a lot of topics of discussion that I don't feel any other organization would have opened these topics. I hope for continued. There's a lot of work to be done, and me myself, and I share this with our listeners that the more understanding of science I had, then the better relationship with religion I had, and the more religion became of a positive energy in my life rather than any negative energy that can come out of any type of religion. So promotion of science, understanding science, is basically understanding how the word works and makes you understand everything else that goes around it. And also spirituality also will be enhanced even by understanding science. Some people think that the more scientific you become, the less spiritual. And I actually find it to be the opposite. I feel the more scientific you are, the more spiritual you can become because of the poetry that is displayed in science. Richard Dawkins describes it in his book Unweaving the Rainbow. Anything else, Ibrahim?
No, thank you, and thank you for all the work you do, Sam, and you're a pillar. We wouldn't be able to do this without you, and I look forward to seeing you in person soon.
Yeah, you're always invited to Dearborn. Yeah. And we hope to see you soon. You got vaccinated, Ibrahim?
Yeah, of course.
Awesome. Yalla, come to Dearborn.
Mesh.
Thank you for our followers and listeners. This will be available on the YouTube channel and also on the podcast. And we'll see you in the next broadcast, the last Wednesday of each month, so the last Wednesday of June. We'll have a great program for you. So see you again.
Thank you for listening to Muslimish Free Thinkers. Do let us know what you think of this episode at facebook.com/Muslimish. Don't forget to visit us at Muslimish.org.